having ukabelo mkitle or makitle. It's makitle. Okay, and then Chavuko Mape is the shortest one. And then Mujiedi Skosana. And then is our old friend. And then from the Department of Labor. And then we have got, today of course is we have an apology from the DG. The DG is not going to be with us. And then there is an acting DG. Mr. Marupi Varese. You know, it's in the Department of Labor. There are many leaders. I still can't really make head and tail of them. Because the problem is that in majority, when they come here, they come almost all of them. Then I can't attach one to the institutions. And then we have got DDG Umrotova is here. And then we have got DDG Seafield is here. And then it's all from the Department of Labor. That's all. Okay. And then honorable members, in terms of our agenda, we are to deal with the Auditor General first, and then and have a little bit of deliberations. But I thought that we will be dealing with questions of clarity. Because as far as I'm concerned, I may not know the culture here, is that the DG just gives us the status quo, what has happened, and I don't know whether there is that much that you can discuss with them, other than the Auditor General only explaining for us to understand what they are saying. And then the department then to come and explain themselves. And but I think we'll deal with it when we get there. And then other than that, and then we'll be having the presentation on the high level, the panel report or recommendations. And then we are going to have two presentations there. Is the presentation from our content advisor. And as well as the department's responses to the recommendations in that specific report. And we wanted to start with Auditor General so that when we are done with them, then they can be released to go home and sleep. Other than that, then it is minutes. I think that is the agenda item, honorable members. Anybody who's happy about the agenda? Honorable Pascal Bay, followed by honorable Bahrain.
Good morning, Chair, members, everyone present. I move for adoption of the agenda.
Thank you very much, honorable Bahrain.
Thank you. I accept that as well. If I just may make a comment that the apologies did come in from Derek America. I'm sure you've noted that.
Yes.
And I have to leave for 40 minutes. I'm not being rude to anyone that might be talking, but I'll come back. I just want to tell them up front that it's not because of anything said at all. Thank you.
Okay. No, it is fine. It is fine. And then after, of course, you have seconded the agreement to the agenda, then we get to the secretary to indicate apologies from members.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to members, the department and the AG's office. We received, Chair, apologies from Honorable Mutambi. Honorable Teko is also with Trade and Industry. Honorable Mudega is sick. Honorable America also sick. And then Honorable Madisha, he cannot be here today. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Members. Is there any comment on those apologies? None. Apologies then noted and accepted. Any move for the adoption of the agenda? I think this is what we've already done beforehand. We then still go straight to the Auditor General. And then if they are ready, and then they can take us on.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members and colleagues. In the presentation, we packaged a message from the audit that we performed for the financial year 17-18 particularly. It includes the feedback on all six entities within the labor portfolio. Mudie will take us through the three sections particularly. So we focus on the financial statements, which we express an opinion explicitly in the financial statements. We also performed an audit on the predetermined objectives, which we would highlight the material findings where they were applicable in the audit report. We also performed an audit on the focus areas relating to the compliance with key laws and regulations. And for the entities that were affected by the findings, their audit report would have reflected as such. Overall, for the labor portfolio, for the financial year 17-18, there was an improvement, particularly in relation to SEE and UIF. SEE was qualified in the previous year, which then improved to unqualified in the current year, then followed by UIF, which managed to move from a disclaimer into unqualified with findings. So that's an overview picture, but I'm going to allow Mudie, Honorable Chair, that she takes us through the nitty-gritty thereof. Thank you.
Thank you, Sabo. In this, the slide 7 is just an explanation of the outcomes, audit outcomes that we provide, and the movement from year to year, the bottom part of the slide. So when we go into the next slide, these explanations or descriptions will be important to understand. Moving on to the next slide is the accountability wheel. In the accountability wheel, we have six steps. It's mainly to explain the activities that would make the accountability be successful and the results thereof. You will see in this, on step two, is planning. So in planning, it's basically to say that you plan your predetermined objectives and put action plans together. Step three is what you're doing and the internal controls that you put in place to achieve the predetermined objectives that you have set for yourself. And then step four is monitoring of the activities and the plan. Step five then is when you then don't achieve your predetermined objectives, what do you do about it? Is consequence management. And if all step two, three, and four, five goes well, then the outcomes would be positive. You would then achieve better results and eventually have impact on the predetermined objectives or the mandate that the department and entities have. And then would be accountability. And then moving on to slide 10. Slide 10 is then the audit outcomes.
Sorry. Just after having gone from slide 9, that we have explained accountability, do you mind start with the last picture and explain it just before you continue? You proceed with the rest. The last picture, whether it's a slide or what.
Seven.
This one.
Oh, okay.
If you can go to that one and link that accountability slide with that last one, then you can go back and proceed.
Okay. So in the slides of the...
Yes.
Slide 22.
On which page?
22. Okay. Slide 22 is that equation of the corruption, basically in terms of whether corruption will be up or down when certain activities are performed. So it, the monopoly basically is where we know that government has monopoly in the sector and the discretion on how the fiscus goes and the planning and the responsibility of how the funds are distributed to achieve certain objectives or priorities in the country. So then if you have, if your the accountability is low, then it means then your corruption on the other side would be high. But if the accountability, then there's more accountability, it means then the corruption levels would be low. Yes. And then, linking it to number seven, go to seven. So we have monopoly and the discretion to distribute funds and accountability. Number seven, step seven is higher, where then you have all the steps have been successful. You have put, you have planned properly. You have aligned your planning to the priorities and to your mandate. You have put internal controls in place and all of that, you achieved your outcomes. Then the impact or the service delivery will be high. You would have made high impact. Is it clear? So if all of these steps are taking place successfully, then eventually you will have impact in terms of making, delivering on services. And there your accountability will be achieved. And then going back to the formula, then if you do all of these things, there'll be very minimum corruption because you're holding people accountable on step six for not performing according to your plan. And you have controls in place, then the levels of corruption will be very low. Okay. And then moving on to the outcomes of the department, over the period of 5 years, as you can see that the slight regression, but if you compare 16-17 and 17-18, there was an improvement. There was an improvement because FEE and UIF moved to the area where they obtained unqualified audit opinions with material findings in the yellow area. And NEDLAC regressed. You will see that in 2016-17, NEDLAC was in the yellow zone, and in the current year, it has regressed to the purple zone where they are qualified because they were not able to adjust or correct the material misstatements that the auditors identified during the audit. Mainly, it was irregular expenditure disclosure note. And then we have CF. CF is still in the red zone of the disclaimer of opinion. And if I may talk about Dole, Dole had unqualified opinion with material adjustments, so they were able to adjust the material misstatements mainly in the area of assets, intangible and tangible assets releases. And then CCMA also is in the area of unqualified with material misstatements that were adjusted. They were able to adjust. And then SEE moved from qualified. They were able to correct the material misstatements of the past and even in the current year to move to the yellow zone. UIF made a huge improvement because they came from the disclaimer of opinion right up to unqualified opinion with material adjustments. So that was an improvement by UIF as well as the SEE. And then moving on to the next slide. Next slide is also a portfolio snapshot. You will see at the corner we do not have the clean audits yet in the portfolio. And the quality of financial statements that were submitted for audit, none of the entities or audities that we audited in the portfolio submitted financial statements that didn't have material misstatements. So the financial statements that were submitted had to be corrected to get to the outcomes that we saw in the previous slide. And then quality of performance report, SEE managed to submit the performance report and as well as their annual performance plan. They didn't have material adjustments or errors that needed to be corrected by the auditors. And then with regard to compliance with legislation, all of the auditors department and all of five entities had material adjustments on this particular one. And mainly it's because of the quality of financial statements. I said all of them had errors. So if you have errors there, then there's non-compliance with the PFMA Act if we identify material misstatements. So automatically then you have a non-compliance finding there, as well as the supply chain. In the area of supply chain, all of the entities and the department had the irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which then resulted in them not complying with the expenditure management compliance requirements. And the bottom part is the irregular expenditure in the portfolio. Just to break down the irregular expenditure in the portfolio on slide 13, in the current year, fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the portfolio was 14 million. And this 14 million was mainly CF was 9.5 million and DOL was 4.5 million of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And irregular expenditure of 113 was mainly it was mainly DOL and it was CCMA and UIF, apologies. So 113 was CCMA and UIF, 45 million UIF and 58.5 million CCMA. Those are the two entities that had a lot of...
Sorry, Mr. Chair, may I just don't fully understand it. Can we go back again to the beginning of the slide? Sorry about that.
You better pull the mic so that we can hear you.
Sorry. Sorry, Mr. Chair, I just don't understand it. It says, on one side it says 14 million and then 781,000 and then 404 million. I'm not a mathematician, so I just don't understand. Can maybe they explain a little bit? Sorry.
Just go to start off.
No, okay. You've got a small brain.
Oh, okay. So, fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the portfolio in the current year was 14 million. And the top two contributors in that 14 million was CF with 9.5 million and Dole 4.5 million. And then fruitless and wasteful expenditure, if you move down the slide, the fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 113 million in 20 is irregular expenditure. So the main contributors there were UIF and CCMA. UIF irregular expenditure was 45 million and CCMA was 58.5 million. That's irregular expenditure in the portfolio in the current year.
Honorable Bahrain, are you aware that the picture, the slide 13, right at the top on 14 million, the black bar reflects the current year under review.
Okay.
And then on the bottom side, where this irregular expenditure on the left, the black bar as well is the one for the year under under review, the 130. they've just hidden the key at the bottom, but it's not easy to see the key.
Thank you.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Okay, thank you.
Help each other.
Thank you, Chairperson. Moving on to slide 14. Slide 14 is a further breakdown of the irregular expenditure in the portfolio. On your top right, it is just to explain the irregular expenditure of what 56 million in the, that we identified that related to the previous year. So of that 113 million irregular expenditure, 56 million was irregular expenditure that related to previous year and was disclosed for the first time in 2017-18. And then the paragraph below that one, it explains the irregular expenditure that was incurred or payments that were made in the contract that were irregularly awarded in previous years, but their payments were made in the current year. So in the previous year, they would have been a non-compliance, and in the current year, as the payments were made, they are then irregular expenditures. And then below, the bottom part of the slide is just a comparison or analysis of the irregular expenditure that was incurred in 2016-17 and 17-18 financial year. There was no movement there, so there was no improvement because all the entities and the department, like I said earlier, had irregular expenditure. And then moving on to the next slide, slide 15, still continue to break down the transgressions of the supply chain management or the findings in the supply chain management. So the top part where it's SEE and UIF, the names of the bidders who submitted competitive bids were not published for UIF and SEE, and NetLeg and CF didn't obtain three quotations. Did not always obtain three quotations. And for Dole, CF, and NetLeg, the preference point system applied were incorrect, or they were not supplied in certain circumstances. And then for CCMA and CF, UIF, there were contract management findings there, various contract management findings. Those are the findings that resulted in the supply chain irregular expenditure that we reported in the previous slide. And slide number 16, just about fraud and consequence management.
mainly on STM misconduct. There were allegations not investigated in the portfolio for Dole, Netlec, and CF. And for Dole, UIF, and CF, investigations took longer than 3 months. For CF, there were allegations not properly investigated. We move on to the next slide. The next slide is the outcomes of Productivity SA. Productivity SA on financial statements as well was unqualified audit opinion with material misstatements that were corrected. And there were areas of key legislation that Productivity SA didn't comply with in financial and performance management. On performance information, Productivity SA didn't have findings. Move on to the next slide. And the status of internal control, we have three drivers of the status of the internal control, which is leadership, financial and performance management, and governance. And for UIF, leadership was good. And for Dole CCMA SEE, leadership was a bit of concern. And for CF, there's intervention required in leadership. Financial and performance management, Dole CCMA, UIF, and Netlec is of concern. And for CF and SEE, there's still intervention required. Governance, for CCMA, SEE, Netlec, and UIF, it was good. And for Dole and CF mainly, it was because of the internal audit and audit committee. There, it was mainly because, especially at CF, the information submitted to the audit committee and internal audit had material errors that restricted these two units from making proper decisions, or just hampered them to make decisions because information that is submitted had material errors. And for CF, sometimes information...
My pacemaker, don't worry.
For CF, in certain circumstances, information will not be submitted, so that hampered the effectiveness of internal audit and audit committee. And another one was implementation of recommendations made by internal audit and audit committee. Management was not implementing those recommendations, so that as well hampers the effectiveness of internal audit and audit committee. And in terms, moving on to the next slide, is the level, the assurance then provided by the management, accounting authority, executive authority, as well as internal audit, audit committee, and portfolio committee. So if you look at the first level of assurance, like I said, senior management of the four entities, CCMA, Dole, and Netlec, was they provide some assurance. And again, that's the same principle, that if information or internal controls are not functioning effectively throughout the year, and the reports that are produced have errors. We have reported in the initial slides where they have unqualified, most of them have unqualified opinion with material findings that were corrected. So it indicates, it shows at this level that management wait for external auditors or internal auditors to identify errors. Errors are corrected to get to the reliable information. So then you cannot get assurance from management. You get some assurance, not assurance that you want to put them in the green area. And for FEE and CF there, they provide limited assurance because of the errors that we get or the quality of information that we get from management. So that's senior management assurance. And then accounting authority at CCMA, it provides assurance. And for DOL FEE NEDLAC UIF, it provides some assurance. For CF, limited assurance because of the disclaimer environment. Information is not available, or the available information is not credible. Executive authority, the same principle, mainly for five auditees, it provides some assurance, and for CF, no assurance. So the second level of assurance, like I explained, for CF, then the limitations posed by errors or information that is not available for internal audit and audit committee to be effective. And we can move on to the next slide. And what are the root causes? Slide 20 then says, what are the root causes of the audit outcomes that I presented from the previous slide? One of the root causes that we have identified was the slow response to improve key controls and addressing the risks identified, meaning that management and executive authority do not respond with the required agency to our messages. And the second root cause was inadequate consequences for poor performance and transgression. So for the officials who deliberately or negligently ignore their duties, there are no consequences taken, which is why then you don't see improvement in the audit outcome. Others would then be stagnant in yellow, and for CF, they are red for over 5 years. And competencies, another root cause for the outcomes that we have reported was competencies. There were competency gaps that affected the rate of improvement on the audit outcome. And then we have also made recommendations on the root causes that we have identified. For CF in particular, there must be a rethinking and reinventing the way CF operates. There must be a complete overhaul of CF operation to improve the status where they are and where they've been over the past five years. And the department and its entities must develop action plans, responsive action plans, and the action plans must allocate officials, have timelines, and be monitored. And action plans must not only focus in one area, they should include all the assurance providers' recommendations. And the third recommendation that we made is that there must be performance management processes, and the disciplinary actions must be taken where the officials are not performing at their required level. And these disciplinary actions must not take long. They must be within reasonable time. And the actions also must be taken against the officials who commit financial misconduct, fraud, and corruption. And in conclusion, the department and entities, if the members would just do that analysis of how they have achieved, and we have seen that most of them have achieved less than 50% of the predetermined objectives, that, and they were linked to the NDP. So clearly, if the department and entities continue the way they're continuing, their priorities in terms of NDP would not be achieved. So for all the entities, they are not achieving 100% on their predetermined objectives. So they are left. For CCMA, it was about 75%. Three of four objectives were achieved. And then we can link it to then that wheel of accountability. Thank you, Chairperson. That's all from my side.
You want to round up?
Thank you, Chair. I think in summary from ourselves, we are concerned about compensation fund particularly within the portfolio. Not neglecting the fact that the rest of the entities that are still sitting in the yellow zone, some of them would have sat there for some time, so it will be important that they move, at least to a cleaner administration. Yes, we are happy for UIF and SEE, but it will be important that as a portfolio we find a way to coordinate efforts and make sure that we pull each other up. In terms of some of the findings, majority of the findings that particularly we would have raised in CF, we've been raising them for the past 4 years in particular. So we get to the point where we're not sure now how else do we put this thing for the entity to move. So that's in summary our message. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. There you are. And like as I tried to indicate what else we can do about the Auditor General, but I tend to be assisted by your own selves. But initially is, what is there that they've said that you did not get right? You think you have not understood them, or they have not explained it completely, so that we all have a similar understanding of what they said, and we see the same picture of this entity. And if after that, then you think that there is any need for a discussion with Auditor General, then you will convince me why. But they are assisting us. They assist us. They just simply come and give a picture of the entities we are doing oversight over. And therefore, it's important that you understand exactly what they are saying, so that then you are equipped to actually, when you actually handle the entities that are in front of us. They are not part of the six entities. They're just outside. Honorable
Bahrain. Thank you, I appreciate it, and I apologize that I had to stop you in between because I was getting a bit lost and I'm not good at these things. One of the main reasons why I did law is I couldn't do accounting. So, but if we could go to page 11, slide 11, no findings on compliance with legislation. You see that, and you get the note. But you said there was some improvement. There was some. So why give the department naught? I don't understand that. Okay, I've got more questions. Can I ask them all, or?
Yeah, just ask all of them.
Yeah, thank you.
Maybe you can give some of them what they
explain. The one is an overall question, if you may. I know the. And maybe I'm wet behind the ears, but the Auditor General has this overview like an eagle flying overhead and has a look carefully at everything that happens there. And you are coming out with some findings that could actually be fraudulent, in fact. There could be findings of possible fraud. I'm not sure, do you only report to, I'm not sure how the reporting workers, if you have an obligation to report that maybe to the police or to the Hawks or to whatever, I don't know, I don't understand how that obligation works. We as a portfolio committee don't have that obligation, I don't think. We report back to Parliament. But I'm not sure what you're, I mean, you finding things that look, might look nasty, and you will know that better than us. I don't understand on slide 15, the preference point system. Maybe you can tell us what that is. I'm not sure what that is. Maybe the others know, but I don't. If you can have a look at slide 16, you've said allegations not investigated, and I don't seem to understand the bar, but it's an allegation not investigated, and you're referring to Dole, Nedlac, and CF. How many is it? Do we know what it is or what the extent is? And the same goes for all three. In other words, investigations took longer than 3 months. I mean, are there some that are sitting at 10 years, maybe? I don't know. Maybe you can fill us in on that. And it's the same allegations not properly investigated. And I understand the CF seems to be guilty of that one, but are they about to investigate them? How long has it not been investigated? Because you gave us exactly the same report last year. So it looks like there's been absolutely no improvement for the 4 years, which is a bit disconcerting, to say the least. If we can go to slide 18. I'm not sure what you mean by leadership. I can understand financial and performance management and governance, but I'm not sure what you mean by leadership. Is that some definition for that? It looks like UIF has got great leadership, but I'm not sure what that is. Slide 19. I'm not really sure what the levels are. First level, and I understand we get all the way from senior management down to portfolio committee, which is us, and we provide you assurance. I'm not sure what that means. How can we provide you any assurance of any nature other than us looking at this with a jaundiced eye? So I'm not understanding what is expected of us. What is the AG expecting of us in terms of providing assurance? And we seem to have done something right. I don't know what it is. If I can go to slide 20, the slow response to improving key controls and addressing risk areas. You've said 100%, all of them have been slow in coming back to you. Even the CCMA, which makes me very unhappy, who have done everything else right by the looks of things. And the competencies, every year you tell us that there's no competency there. It's gone to 50% now. So it looks like there is now competency in UIF and CCMA and Dole, maybe, I don't know. I think Dole, yes, Dole as well. Has there been an improvement? Are you seeing the improvement in the competencies? I think last year, I think you said it was worse, if I remember correctly. Sorry, just go to... And then I go finally to the recommendations of 21. It is a bit depressing. Because it's the same recommendations. So no one's listening to you. You've got a toy telephone. You're talking into the telephone, but there's no one on the other side. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. And the unfortunate thing is that you ask questions for clarity, and others it was discussion, others it's questions that you are supposed to ask the department or the entities.
Ah,
and you have actually missed all of them. The question of recommendations that are actually the same, we need to ask the entities what they have done about it.
I withdraw that question.
The question that relates to the slow response and all that, we need to ask the entities themselves. And then what they need to explain, it is the definition of leadership. And when they say that you as parliament, you have provided assurance, what is that that they are reading? What is the basis of attaching parliament to providing assurance? I think also that they need to explain, we provide assurance to who? I think that is what will explain exactly what you may require to. I think because there are many, then if you could respond to that before other members raise any other thing, you can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members, for the questions. I want to respond to the one that talked to the audit process, and I'll allow Mudiay to talk to the nitty-gritty thereof. If you can just allow me to articulate how we come to the picture on flat 11, in terms of how you interpret it. I think the question was, you had said that there's a slight improvement in the portfolio, but you've given us a nod on compliance with laws and regulations. That slide, or that corner, it is meant to explain or give articulation of the entities that did not have any compliance whatsoever and non-compliance. So it says no findings on compliance with legislation. It means that when we audited the compliance with key laws and regulations, we find no entity that did not have a non-compliance of one or the other. So all six entities within the DOL portfolio had a non-compliance of some sort. Yeah. So as a result, we said none of them did not have findings on compliance with the law. That's how we articulate that slide. And that there was a key question around the Auditor General, what is your obligation with regard to reporting, specifically perhaps to subs and other investigating entities. Our mandate, it is to report to the leadership of the entity and the oversight structure, trusting that those two, between the leadership being management of the entity and all oversight structures, will then determine what needs to happen after that. So in the management reports, we also articulate, we would say, these are the findings that in our view have got indication of fraud. We're requesting you to please investigate it. Either you do it yourself or you hire a service provider, whichever way you do it. But the obligation lies with management in terms of the PFMA and obviously other legislation for the oversight structure. So on our own, we would not go to subs and report an entity.
But that's very onerous for us.
So I think those are the two ones that I wanted to talk to. But there was another one around leadership. You know, what do we look at around leadership? We say there are three pillars of internal control environment, and leadership is the first one. Under leadership, we put in the sub-measures. There we look at whether, first we talk about the tone that you said, either as an accounting officer, accounting authority. We also look at the policies and procedures, because we say it will be impossible for everybody else to execute their responsibilities if the policies and procedures are not first finalized, authorized, and approved. That sets the tone in terms of how financial management will take place. We also look at the action plan, because we say the development of the action plan, it needs to be driven at a high level for it to get the serious attention. We look at the capacity in terms of whether we are recruiting, we are filling the vacancies with the right people. For us, those are some of the elements that when we talk to the evaluation of leadership, we would analyze each of those sub-elements. So there's a couple of sub-elements that then drive our summary on leadership.
Chairperson, if you can allow me to then give Mudiay the chance to talk to the other members.
Sorry for Parliament.
Okay, let me close it up then. What we had done when we came to meet with you last year, there are certain things that we've requested that you incorporate as your processes for exercising oversight. One of it was find a way to incorporate internal audit and audit committee so that the reports that you look at, they're credible, to enable you as an oversight structure to exercise oversight on credible documents. So there are a couple of things that we agreed with the Portfolio Committee for Labour on, to say, please can we look at those things. All that we've done in this instance is to say, those areas, did we do them or not? And we found out that we've done them, then we give you the grade. So we only narrowed it to the things that we agreed on previously. Thank you.
That's quite a radical answer. Puts a lot of pressure on our chairman.
I think Honourable Bahrain must be comforted that he has done well in providing assurance.
Yeah, but
you must be comforted, because when you spoke to the AG last year, then you proceeded to hear the department and entity. You produced a report, and the report then was tabled in the House. And it was adopted in the House, and then the Speaker has to communicate the contents of that report as well as your recommendations on what must happen back to the Department. You have done your part. You may not be aware, but you have done your part, and you have done a lot, and we expect you to do it again now, this time around. Let's hear all the responses from your questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the question of the preference point system, slide number 15. There, for DOL, CF, and MEDLEC, we had findings where either the preference point system, the calculation was not according to the required National Treasury system, or they were calculated properly but not allocated to the correct dealer.
Okay.
Okay. So what is the preference point system is when the bidder submits information for, you know, during the bidding process, is for the entities or the requirement as the National Treasury, is that the preference points be calculated based on the functionality, the price, and the triple B scores that the entities that or suppliers that submitted. So all of that information is used to calculate the preference points, and the highest preference point will be allocated. So it's not only based on the price, whether your price is low, the functionality is taken into account, and the BEE is taken into account to come to a certain number, and the highest then would be awarded. So when that was done, we have found that the awarding was not made according to that calculation of the preference point.
Thank you.
And then slide 16. Like you said, majority was CF. We have reported in the past the number of investigations that were going on at CF, and for CF, we know that it was even for longer than 12 months. Here we reported 3 months. And in total, there were about 186 of the investigations in the report. And for CF, there were about 75 that were even longer than 12 months, or that were ongoing for a long period. So there were more than 100
investigations in the portfolio, mainly from CF, going to 200 numbers. And then the competency. Slide number 20. It was mainly at CF, that root cause was at CF and FEE, and that was based on the information that we audited, the reports that we audited from management, and particularly in finance, where we have observed that the officials were not able to either apply, for example, the standard of graph in the financial statements at their level where it was expected that they should have that expertise. So there were competency gaps at CF and SUE, and that we based it on the information that we were auditing, that officials were not able to apply the principles of graph standards and the compliance as well, to interpret the compliance areas with various requirements of the legislation. That's all.
Honorable member, then Joe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the team, for AG. Rabbi Chair, I don't have a question for today. Yolinda, entities. But today is just a comment. For example, if ATDDG is productive as a for the past 3 years, it told an unqualified opinion, and the issue would team corner la unga and diga se corner can be che for the past 3 years. That's one unqualified report, no clean audit. And on page, I think it's page 20, slide the slow response to improving, the management and the executive authority did not respond with the required agency, which means uma kunjalo che. That is why kuna leya productive SA ibe name 3 years unqualified report, if the Auditor General can't get the response on time. Yeah, thanks for that.
Honorable Van Karvik.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've been partly covered by the previous comment, but I want to thank the AG for the presentation and enlightening us. But I think the majority of the comments would be directed to the department and the entities. So I won't go into that area. We'll have our time, we would engage them. But I want to go to, when I looked at the briefing notes, I want to zoom into page 2 and 3, where you are talking about the current year's irregular expenditure, as well as the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I want you to explain to us I see that table, and it's indicating the amount prior to audit and then amount after the audit and then the difference. Can you just enlighten us on what that actually means? I don't want to have my own interpretation. It might be wrong. Just explain to us. And also, can you explain to us this comment that you are referring to in terms that they say completeness of the amount could not be confirmed? Can you explain that also to us? Then when you look at the trends of the other entities, including the department, I saw that when you compare the amounts prior to audit and the amounts after audit, in all cases it's more and substantially more. So I want to, can you give us an indication, but I know I might be not fair to you, but would that then mean in the cases where you say completeness of amount could not be confirmed, that we might have larger amounts? Can you give us an indication there? When I look at the others, I can almost say it might be the case. Then you're talking about not enough consequence management, and especially in terms of all non-compliance, all entities including the department who are non-compliant in terms of PFMA regulations. Can you then clarify to us, when you say that not enough consequence management exists, I've been following what's been happening, especially in terms of reports on fraud and corruption and money laundering with regards to compensation fund. And in the public domain, I see there's a continuous trend of people being exposed and cases in court and people being found guilty. Would you say that is just a tip of the iceberg? Because there's a lot of money that I see that's involved there. So can you give us an indication of what you mean there, or your analysis? Then you are talking about a proposal of a complete overhaul of the compensation fund. Can you explain that statement also? What you mean by that? Because, Chairperson, I want to establish, or I want us to get an indication of where the problem really lies. Because we know that there's been action plans during the past 4 years. And can you, if you are saying that nothing really changed, it's a small difference, can you then tell me that if we had so much action plans, does it really yield the necessary results or the expected results, or what do you propose in terms of that? And also, we've in previous years, Chairperson, we've requested the AG's office to go hand in hand with the department, and we'll remember they spoke to us in terms of the end of the third quarter, I think it's end of December, that report, and they gave us some red flags, and they said that we are continuously engaging with the department and the entities, and they gave the assurance that by the end of the financial year, a lot of those red flags will be addressed. Can you confirm now, if you give us this picture, that indeed something happened? But I also take cognizance of the fact that you say that management is not implementing the recommendation. So, Chairperson, I really want to establish also, if we have, especially in terms of compensation fund, do we have the required skills, or where does the problem lie? Because we know that there were a lot of vacant posts, and there's the post has been filled, and or do we still have a mismatch of skills, or is that simply an attitude problem, or adopting to poor culture from the new employees, or what's actually your observation in terms of that area of concern? Then, Chairperson, there's been a continuous trend during the past years, financial years, when we received the audit outcome of documentary proof that couldn't have been provided to the AG to do a proper analysis or a proper audit or verify the information that they receive from the department and the entities. Would you say that in terms of, I didn't hear you mentioning anything in terms of that, would you say that in this financial year there has been an improvement, or is stagnant, or regression? Can you just, I'll pause there, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and you may proceed if you are ready.
Thank you, Chairperson. The breakdown of the, on page 2 of the note, the member has requested that we explain the breakdown of irregular expenditure and neglect. So we have broken down the irregular expenditure that we reported on the slide of 113 in terms of whether the way management disclosed that irregular expenditure without auditors coming to identify additional irregular expenditure. And based on this table, we have disclosed the amounts that were disclosed by management in the financial statements before we signed off on the financial statements or during the audit process. So the difference column would be the amount of irregular expenditure that was identified during the audit. So before, it's the amounts that we said were prior to audit. After audit, up to when we signed off on the financial statement, the irregular expenditure and process expenditure is the third column. So there were changes. And in one of the slides then, we have explained the key areas of non-compliance in the supply chain management. So that which have resulted in this amount in the different column. With regard to completeness of that 113 million that we presented earlier in the slide of irregular expenditure, that amount is not complete. And mainly because at CF and NECLEX, we have qualified that disclosure of irregular expenditure because we didn't obtain information supporting the amounts that we disclosed. So based on our audit process, that amount of 113 is not complete. Could not be confirmed as complete because management didn't provide us that information at CF and NECLEX. So there could be more irregular expenditure. And with fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it is the same principle that before we started audit, these amounts, certain amounts were disclosed, and during the process, we identified irregular expenditure or management identified additional irregular expenditure, which then resulted in that different column. And then you requested that we clarify the consequence management. With investigation, and because of the limitation of scope that we have at CF, we're not getting information. In other words, the environment is not transparent for us to say what is happening is really what is happening. That's how it is. And there are investigations relating to fraud, investigations that are long. And if you compare investigations in prior, which in prior was 152, in the current year is more than that. So those are the investigations of financial misconduct together with investigations of fraud. And because we don't have enough information to confirm, and we also have disciplinary actions that are taking long, and in certain circumstances they were not taking place. And in terms of the action plan, you ask if they're yielding results in the portfolio. If the action plans are designed properly, you allocated the officials, you have time frames, you monitor the action plan, then or the audit outcomes would be different. You would see improvement. So if you're not seeing improvement and you're seeing the department together with other entities who've been in the yellow zone of unqualified with material findings and CF in the disclaimer, clearly something is wrong with the action plan, or the action plans are proper but they are not monitored or implemented. So then they are not yielding any positive outcome. Competencies at CF. Like I said, we have come across the information that was submitted for audit indicated that the gap in competency of the official who prepared that information. And because of lack of holding staff accountable or officials accountable, that alone creates an impression that the poor performance, the attitude of or behavior of poor performance is acceptable. So you can imagine the culture that is already created and how it will then impact even those who are waiting and even have competency. So that is the culture for you.
Thank you, Chair. If I may, just to reiterate some of the points or summarize it in terms of what Mudie was saying. Yes, when you go to page 3 of the notes in terms of irregular expenditure, there we're showing you this is the financial statements that we got. We executed an audit and the final financial statement would have a different figure. That would be an indication that the audit process would reveal additional irregular expenditure that ordinarily would not have been disclosed by the entity. And yes, when we say completeness on NetLeg particularly and CF could not be confirmed, we say there is more. We just don't know to what extent. So in simple terms, that's what we put in there in each of the audit reports. I think you asked a direct question in terms of what do you mean when you say complete overhaul for CF. I think for us CF, we said let's just go to the basics. The basics in terms of saying here is a mandate for CF. Are the business processes structured and aligned to what we want to achieve? Going back to the caliber of the people and the officials that we're having as well, as much as people may be having the qualification, there ought to be a realignment in terms of the vision that CF wants to find. And make sure that you cultivate the culture of excellence, and we don't get comfortable with disclaimer year in, year out. Because basically with the disclaimer, it's not an opinion. We didn't express an opinion for almost 6 years. Basically, we say we don't know what is happening in there. And that cannot be, it should not sit well with anybody else. We should then need to be networked to consequence management. When we talk about consequence management, it is not only for instances of fraud. Consequence management starts with making sure that you define the clear criteria on how you want to measure people. You follow them up in terms of what they need to give to you. That is accountability principle. And then you take action that is necessary for instances where people don't deliver on what you got them to deliver on. So that is in summary for us, to say let's just all realign the basic principle. Look at the system, whether they are fit for purpose. Look at the culture around your people. Let's make sure that we move in the same direction. That is in a nutshell. And I think you also talked to, in terms of the third quarter, you got a commitment, I think, from the ODT in terms of them achieving some of the things that need to be achieved. It gets very simple, and that we do even with the action plan. We would have went to CF even in the current year to say, so here is the disclaimer of the previous year, 2017. How do we assist you? So you're part of the action plan, we review the action plan, we give you the feedback, and then we expect that our feedback gets incorporated and then move. We're just not moving in that space. We're just not moving in terms of addressing the root cause and not necessarily trying to attend to the symptoms. You will see when we issue the finding as well. When we issue the finding, we always say, not only should you confirm whether the finding, you agree with it or not, you ought to indicate to us what went wrong. Because consistently we're trying to drive the narrative that says unleash the root cause of the problem so that you can address it. And I think in CF we're just not getting there. Which talks to your last question around document management. By virtue of us saying it's a disclaimer, it means we are not expressing an opinion as the AGSA, which merely says you didn't give me sufficient appropriate audit evidence. You didn't give me enough documents. And that's a challenge in CF. It remains the main challenge that the documents that ought to support your annual performance report, your annual financial statements, are not made available to the auditors. So that when you move on your action plan, at least you move on what you know would have happened. And this is when Mudie was talking to the transparency of the environment. If the environment is not transparent, it will be difficult for anybody to even support you appropriately. Thank you, Chair.
You are done.
I'm done with the chair.
Okay. Honorable Bakrain is already gone. But I just needed to indicate that I'm sure in the National Assembly, Honorable Van Scalpen, there was an activity of an amendment bill from the Standing Committee on Accounts. That's one of Unit Karim, which were trying to amend amending the bill that establishes the Auditor General, that they were giving them some additional power. Yes, and then I think after that has been done, it then that now the Auditor General, I think, will have powers where he can take on certain accounting officers to explain themselves, and also even to recommend that they pay themselves for their own error. I think we have handled that piece of legislation sometimes this year, and I'm not sure whether it has already been finalized. But there is a move to empower the Auditor General to do certain things that enforce compliance. But then I think from my side, I think what I just need clarity on is the issues relating to on your audit, whether you came across any evidence that all these auditees that we're speaking about have got an internal audit unit and again that they have got some sort of a credible audit committee, and whether also you have come across whether they have produced reports to management, and whether there is any sign that management has tried to implement what these two institutions, if they are there, to implement their reports. Anything in that area. I think that is the one area that I just wanted to get. And then also, of course, is the trend, although is that it may not be your baby to speak to it, but just simply to take note, and if there is anything to say, it's fine. When you have, where's my presentation now? When you have an entity, especially these two entities, on slide 10, your slide 10 in the yellow, you have got from 2013-2014, you have got DOL, you have got CCMA. DOL, CCMA. And then 2014-2015, you have got DOL, CCMA. 2015-2016, you have got DOL, CCMA. Then 2016-2017, you have got DOL and CCMA. And then 2017-2018, there is DOL, there is CCMA. They are chronic in the yellow area. Ordinarily, over these 5 years, you should be seeing them either going down, deteriorating because there's officials, the good officials that have left the entity, or they have improved over years and they jump into the green area. That is not happening. That is not happening. And then 2018-2019, we can expect that in the yellow area we are still going to see DOL and CCMA. The other ones are changing, collapsing and whatever, and improving and going down. But the department as well as CCMA chronic in the yellow area. They don't want to go up, and again they are good enough not to go down. What does that say? I'm saying you don't need to respond, but what does that say? Are we having good people that are not interested to improve, to go to the green, but they are conscious enough not to deteriorate, to go into the red area? What? Okay. Speak to the audit committee and the internal audit unit. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. In all six entities, they had a functional audit committee. They had a functional internal audit. Yeah. Now, what we observed in the main is that the recommendations that come from there are not necessarily implemented, especially talking to the floor reform, implemented in time to assist them to catch some of the errors before they even materialize. So ordinarily, if you were to go through the audit committee minutes or reports, you also go through the internal audit reports for the previous years as well, you would see that some of the matters that we are talking to today would have reflected. And I'm saying so that when you look at that report, you don't look at the finding, you look at the internal control deficiency that internal audit would have spoken to. Because the role of internal audit and audit committee, it is not to come tell you the symptoms of what is happening. They pinpoint internal control deficiency that you must attend to. So they may not have given you that particular finding in 2013-14, but they would have given you an internal control deficiency that you need to attend to. As a portfolio, we are not quick in attending to those things, such that we end up carrying the matters right up until the external audit happens. Some of the matters that we are talking to in terms of the financial statement, in terms of the performance report, in terms of compliance, you can actually follow them up in terms of the root cause in the internal audit report. They would be there, one year or the other. The agency in responding to those matters, it is just not where it should be. And yes, this is the main reason. It contributes to why some of the entities will be stuck in the air. Because ordinarily, the internal audit and audit committee, they are supposed to support and assist you so that by the time external audit comes, you've attended to your environment and your reports are credible. We are not there as the DOL portfolio to ensure that we attend to those things. And I'll give an example with SEE and UIF. If you take SEE and UIF, you would actually see that some of the things that they corrected during the year, they didn't only pick them up from us. They picked up from the internal audit and audit committee. But responding to them assisted them in such that by the time we get to them, although there would have been material misstatements, a larger part of it would have been attended to. So we do even attend some of these audit committee meetings. You would understand that they consistently follow up on this matter. So the entities that respond to those governance structures, they get the benefit at the end of the year. And those that do not necessarily respond on time, you're bound to still have errors by the time we come.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm sure the honorable members are very clear. And also, the acting DG, parliamentary officer. And then, carry the message back. You are responding very slow to advice. You don't follow your action plans, or your action plans as well, and they are not relevant to the circumstances that are in front of you, or your action plans that do not produce the outcomes that you want to achieve, and you are producing annual financial statements that do not comply with the crap and all treasury regulations, whatever, that are there, which brings the question to that group of CFOs, to all those auditors, including with the department. If you meet an amount of money to declare in your annual financial statement to be irregular or wasteful expenditure, then others come and tell you that this amount you can't explain it. And you fail to explain it, then you say nobody did not. Irregular or whatever, which would explain it, that you don't know. Then you agree. But it did not declare it right up front. Then it brings a question to our CFO. We have the correct CFO. Who knows what they are doing? And then if we have got internal audit that tries to do their work, and when they produce a report, they just ignore the report. Why have we appointed the internal audit? why are we spending the money on the audit committee? So those members of the audit committee, they are paying every time when they need. Why are we having them? Since their report means nothing. I hope that the SPDG did not come here for this heavy part cost, but unfortunately that you have it. Captain Sam Quick, the one of the and I think, honorable members, I think we need to thank the Auditor General for the enlightenment. We hope that when we meet the department and the entities, then we will be able to talk to them and do our part of assurance. And see whether we cannot get better life for our people through the Department of Labor. And close all those holes where money is going through and nobody can explain on where that service delivery is hampered, because what needs to deliver the service is not done. We will come and talk to the entities. And we hope that the following year, I'm sure that I will be back here the following year, and then we will come and see whether there is progress from today until the next year around this time. So thank you very much. And you are with me. Then, honorable members, then we will then get the funded advisor to be ready to speak to us. Not supposed to be a very lengthy conversation. Within the next 15 seconds, I think we should be ready to receive your presentation. Honorable members, I think there is a form from the Auditor General that looks like this. Yes, and then if we could just try and complete that, so that then they can, those forms can follow them. And then the Cornet advisor may proceed if he's ready.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, colleagues, and our guests. I'll refer you to a document titled The summary of the report of the high-level panel on the assessment of key legislation and acceleration of fundamental change. As a background, this high-level panel was conceived in the fourth parliament. That is when the fourth parliament identified the assessment of the impact of legislation passed in 94 as a priority, as a key priority. Okay, this priority was incorporated into the strategic plan of parliament for 2014 up to 2019. And subsequently, the high-level panel of eminent South Africans was established by the Speaker's Forum in December 2015 to undertake this task. The high-level panel mandate was to review legislation, assess implementation, identify gaps, and propose appropriate remedial measures. So the panel's work was divided into three main thematic areas, and the most relevant to us is the first thematic area, which is poverty, unemployment, and the equitable distribution of wealth. The mandate of the high-level panel was, among others, to assume overall responsibility for the assessment of key legislation and the acceleration of fundamental change, to assess the impact of existing legislation and identify legislative gaps, to assess the possible unintended consequences, gaps, and unanticipated problems in post-apartheid legislation, as well as how effectively laws have been implemented, and to propose appropriate remedial measures to Parliament, including amendment, repeal, or additional legislation. So, of more relevance to the Parliament Committee on Labour is the first thematic area, which is poverty, unemployment, and equitable distribution. The work group on this thematic area was tasked with producing a report on the following focus areas: growth, poverty, and inequality. And under that sub-theme was wage inequality, wealth distribution and inequality, labor regulatory environment, unemployment, poverty, and access to basic services. I'm not going to go through the other thematic areas because they are not directly relevant to the portfolio committee on labor. So from there, I'm just going to go straight to unemployment. The report of the high-level panel on unemployment is based on the 2016 statistics of South Africa. However, the 2018 first quarter statistics does not differ much from the 2016 statistics. For example, as in 2016, of the 37 million people aged between 15 and 64, 16 million were employed in the first quarter of 2018. In the first quarter of 2018, 5.98 million people were actively looking for work, while there were 5.8 in 2016. So the number of economically inactive population grew from 12.8 million in 2016 to 15.3 million in the first quarter of 2018. So the report reflects that 40% of adults, black Africans, were employed in 2016, while the figures for colored Indian and white South Africans were 50%, 54%, and 63% respectively. So the Statistics South Africa figures for the first quarter of 2018 are similar to the 2016, except for the employment figure of the Indian population, which was down to 53%. Furthermore, the report reflects that only 13% of the population from 15 to 24 years were employed in 2016, while 51% of those from 25 to 34 years were employed. The figure for those from 35 to 54 years was over 60%. There was a light change in the figure for the first quarter of 2018 in that employment was 12% for those from 15 to 24 years and 49% for those from 25 to 34 years. Then the panel, the high-level panel identified the causes of unemployment and classified them into three categories, which are low levels of employment in agriculture, low rates of economic growth, and skill and capital biases in the economy. And then they go further to expatiate on those causes. And then I'll go straight to the recommendations of the panel that are relevant to the Department of Labor. So with regard to fighting the scourge of unemployment, the panel made the following recommendations. Firstly, that the time to register a new business should be reduced, including getting appropriate permits, that is construction permits, getting telephone and electricity services, registering a property and accessing state sources of business development funding. The panel asserts that these actions, while currently fragmented, could easily be centralized through a single e-government portal. Secondly, that the enterprises below a certain size in terms of employees be exempted from certain regulations, including the obligation to pay the minimum wage and specific components of BEE legislation. Thirdly, that people below a certain age, those that have been unemployed for a long time, people in rural areas, and those living with disabilities be employed without the employer being required to pay the minimum wage on the same terms. The panel recommends that the setting of a separate wage for the vulnerable in the labor market. Fourthly, that Parliament amend Labor Relations Act to remove Section 32, which deals with extension of collective agreements concluded in the bargaining council to non-parties to the collective agreement, or to prescribe that the extension to non-parties will not be applicable to small and medium enterprises. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, and honorable members, do you want to engage this presentation now, or should we take the department and hear what is its responses? Okay.
Chairperson, I propose that we hear the response from the department. Thank you.
Is that agreed, Honorable Jones?
This is my boss, yes.
Okay. Now I know where to press the button if I have to give it. Okay. I think we have been told that the department would present the presentation that is written under NDE, and then if we are ready, then we can continue from the department.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. We are going to request Mr. Murakama to present the presentation, as we expect in this field. The presentation is ready, then we'll respond to questions. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members, honorable Chairperson. Thank you for giving us this opportunity. We did go through the report, and we may have gone through the report slightly beyond what the committee secretariat presented, and in our response we may expand on certain things beyond what we have written, so as to give context precisely because poverty, inequality, and unemployment, the way we are dealing with this issue in government is that 11 departments have been clustered together in the economic and infrastructure cluster, and the department is one of the 11 departments that are tasked to deal with this issue. And even the economic cluster beyond that, the other four clusters in government that incorporate the rest of the government departments are also tasked to deal with this issue. To give a brief example, for instance, the social cluster, where you have social development, education, and so on. In terms of feeding schemes, poverty relief in terms of social grants, etc., you'll notice that they also deal with poverty eradication. So it's not something that is only limited to one department. It's something that all of us have to account. And what we are going to be presenting is the Department of Labor's contribution towards that issue. And I think in the first slide, we are saying within the context of poverty alleviation, there are a number of measures that we do as the department. Primarily, the Unemployment Insurance Fund provides interim relief in case of job losses where women do not necessarily receive maternity benefits from their employers. UIF provides relief in case of loss of spouses that were contributing towards the UIF. The UIF does provide a pension in that regard, which is part of aimed at poverty relief. We also have the compensation fund, where in cases of injuries on duty and the employers may not adequately cover the income replacement for a person that may be injured or is bedridden because of occupational related diseases, the compensation fund will then provide an income relief to those people. In terms of the public employment services, we also deal with a large number of young people that are outside of employment or seeking employment. And in the main, the issue has been access to employment, and their package of measures that the department provides in assisting the unemployed to access employment and to, if possible, remain in employment. And we do that through a whole network of our three main offices in Pretoria, the nine provincial offices that we have across the country, and the 126 labor centers, the satellite offices, the Tucson centers, totaling about 176 that we operate from, and we also use cars and trucks to reach far outlying areas where we don't necessarily have offices, to visit those places once a week so that we can provide a collective of these services to our people. On inequality, honorable members may know that the Department of Labor, all the legislation that we have are in the main trying to deal with this problem and trying to redress the imbalances of the past. And honorable members would know that every year we table the employment equity report, which indicates the extent of progress that either we have made or we are not making in terms of redress at company level, especially JSE listed companies and others, because we do assess the reports that are submitted by the various
companies, and we have a very clear picture in terms of transformation. We also have databases that we keep. The Unemployment Insurance Fund, as people register, we know exactly the earning potential. We can see the wage differentials that continue to exist. We can see the skills levels. We do have a racial breakdown in terms of gender, disability, and so on. On the number of unemployed people, in fact, we are working closely with the SFSA, because we have live data that begins to indicate the extent, and we can see that Africans in particular are still amongst the most affected when it comes to levels of unemployment. If you can go to the next slide on employment, yes, obviously the data released by the report dates to 2016. But if you have noticed, honorable members, is that every time we present our quarterly report, we give you also the existing or the quarterly statistics that we receive from the SFSA, because in our case it is important to look at the trends in terms of employment levels across all provinces. And this data is drawn from a number of things. The UI filing system gives us an indication of levels of retrenchment, etc., and the number of claims that are happening in a number of areas. The C filing also gives us the number of occupational injuries, layoffs, and so on, and the claims that are happening in the compensation fund. The ESSA online system also is able to tell us on the number of people that are leaving the schooling system, those that have been retrenched, that are registering as work seekers, and some of the discouraged workers who come on to register, and with the hope of getting something in the employment. And we also are busy piloting another system that is also going to deal with the national minimum wage exemption. We know that the key issue here was to make sure that these systems talk to each other, and that we streamline them, and we can make them accessible to employers. And we can say without fear that our online systems are systems that employers can now interface with from the comfort of their home, and we are making these systems to be accessible through cell phones and all that. We acknowledge, honorable members, that there are some outlying rural areas that may not have access due to data costs and all that. And that is why the department is implementing measures to make sure that apart from having the kiosks and so on in our offices, we also have Wi-Fi extended in these offices, so that people with their own cell phones can come to the department and also access information that they need. Obviously, we have put in measures to curb the abuse of access or usage of data to our systems. If we can go on to the next slide around access to quality education, again, they may not have directed this issue to us, but honorable members may know that there is a direct relationship between the education levels that people get and the access to employment, because this is one of the thing that is also contributing towards the labor market discourse that we have. We all invest a lot of money towards the education of our families, children, and so on, with the hope that they will get a better future, either in terms of employment or self-employment. So that is why there's a direct link. Now, there are a number of issues here. We can respond by saying, honorable members know that whilst we had policies that were passed by this parliament, an example would have been the skills development, etc. In 2008, this function was transferred from the Department of Labor to the Department of Education, and it now resides in that area. However, we are working with them, and we do have the unemployment insurance fund, which, after having experienced a massive loss of employment in a number of areas, we also continue to contribute, especially among the UI contributors, with the aim of making sure that we cushion the impact on the UIF, and we provide a facility that will speed up the process of getting them back to employment. The skills development was initially, when legislation came to Parliament, meant to address this problem. It was not meant to compete with the education system, the FET, the universities, and so on. It was out of the realization that there is a large number of people, the need which the eminent group pointed, that the large cohort of people that are not in education or not in employment need a different type of intervention to make sure that they participate in the economy of the country. And honorable members may know that before 2009 that we had regional training centers and all sorts of institutions that were targeting that group with the aim of empowering people to make sure that they can sustain themselves, be it with any types of skills programs. However, those programs were discontinued after 2009, and the only things that we are now trying to do with the UIF is to assist in partnerships with the FETs to see if we can get some of the people that are being retrenched to get back into employment. Secondly, we are also having career counselors that are doing their level best in terms of counseling and giving people information and a whole range of competency assessment and rechanneling them into the education system, though we know that those that have not been to school are finding it difficult either in terms of the cost to afford the current education system or to get a place. And we are hoping that with the contributions from the UI, we will be able to deal with that cohort of people that are out of the education system. If we can go on to the next one, I think the labor activation is also doing a lot, not only for the unemployed, but also through the investment with the PIC. It has funded a number of programs that are aimed at providing, for instance, student accommodation in universities and so on. So what happens, Honorable Chair, is that people, the UI reserves that are reserves that are invested with the PIC and the IDC, a number of people will come with an idea, approach either the IDC or the PIC, make a loan that they get from the PIC and build in line with the investment mandate of the UI, things like student accommodation and so on, at favorable interest rates, and in that way, that's how we are also contributing. The career counselors are also doing a lot in terms of rechanneling people into the system. On the realization of social economic rights, They make a number of recommendations. I won't go back into repeating what they are saying in terms of racial differences, the disadvantaged, and how we can assist them in terms of opportunities, and how Parliament can intervene. Except that from the Department of Labour, we believe that the legislation that we have was tested and is based on the international conventions that are applicable in more than 154 member states that are part of the ILO. So all our legislations were subjected to ILO scrutiny, and we believe that because they are in line with a number of conventions that are not only embraced by us but internationally, these laws are aimed at ensuring that we also contribute in the socio-economic rights of the people of our country. On social assistance, again, they make quite a number of recommendations. Again, we will link the social assistance that we provide, honorable members, to the unemployment insurance fund. In fact, this is an envy of a number of countries in the SADC region and within the African Union, because they don't have an agency or a facility like the unemployment insurance fund that is able to intervene in case of employment loss to provide the kind of interim relief that we provide to people that would have lost employment. You can imagine the kind of poverty that would have been exacerbated if we didn't have levers such as the unemployment insurance fund and the compensation fund to deal with the loss of employment, either as a result of job losses or injuries on duty. And also the free services that we are providing, which largely the labor brokering were providing at a cost to work seekers that do not necessarily have money, is also something that a number of neighboring countries are coming to us to see how we go about assisting work seekers to access employment, because we know that once they access employment, they will contribute to the UIF and to the tax base of the country. And at the same time, we will also provide a relief to other social ills that we have, such as crime, drugs, and so on. Because in an event where you have people unemployed, you also have the unfortunate reality that they get involved in all sorts of other things that do not take our country forward. Sustainable employment for people with disabilities is something that we are doing, though we must accept that the scale, given the number of people that are with disabilities, is not sufficient. We do provide subsidies to organizations that engage people with disabilities in employment. We're working closely with the social development in this area. They also have 560 such schemes, because our belief is that if we get people with disability to be productive and to become economically active, we will also remove some level of strain on the current social security system. That is why we continue to provide subsidies to this organization. On the rights and discrimination, again, they make a number of recommendations, and again, one will go back to the legislation that we have, the employment equity. We were the first to come to Parliament and say the fines that we've put, the codes that we've put, some employers are not adhering to that. But the legislation is there, there are issues around enforcement, but there are also issues around the companies themselves and the whole problem that we still have as a nation to embrace change. Because you can have all the legal instruments, but if as a nation we don't move together and embrace the fact that we move from the past and we need to correct this by ensuring that we come up with transformation and all sorts of instruments that are going to correct the imbalances of the past, legislation on its own and the courts will not assist. We also have to embark on a lot of education, and we also need preparedness to deal with this issue so that we can begin to eradicate the inequality that we continue to face. Now, the Secretariat the support to Parliament did not also talk to this issue of refugees, migrants, and stateless people. But we're making a comment there because where you have a lot of refugees and we don't have camps, and we have a lot of migrants because of the state of our borders, mm-hmm. and once these people come into the country in the absence of camps, they claim refugee status. They also impact on the labor market, and hence you have all the sporadic incidences of xenophobia and so on, because they do impact on the labor market. Where there is high unemployment, obviously local people will then tend to foreign nationals because they believe that they are taking away their jobs and so on and so on. Now, we are working with the Department of Home Affairs in the amendment to the Act, the 2002 Immigration Act. We also serve on the Immigration Board, but we are also required in terms of the Immigration Act to provide advice to the Department of Home Affairs with regard to those people that or companies that apply for work visas in the country, both corporate and individual visas. We also work together with Home Affairs inspectors in joint operations with the police, especially in the farming, construction, domestic workers, because that's where you also have a large number of undocumented migrants. And people continue to employ those people because they subject them to inferior standards that are not in line with either what was reached at collective bargaining levels and so on. And in some cases, they are subjected to inhuman conditions. And our constitution protects workers, I mean rights of all workers, irrespective of whether they are documented or not, including migrants, and we also have to apply the provisions of the Immigration Act, where people are in the country illegally, have to implement the provisions of the Act, but also deal with the people that employ them, because there are certain provisions that the Act provides, and we're doing a lot of work in that area, including development of a labor migration policy in line with the SADC protocols that we are part of, because this issue is quite a topical issue. Honorable members may know about the discussion around the free movement of people across the borders and the unintended consequences that issue comes with if there are no appropriate measures that are put in place and the subsequent reaction by local people. Building democracy through citizenship and governance, again, this thing was not highlighted, but we picked this issue up because we wanted to put into context the role and the appreciation that institutions such as NEDLAC continue to enjoy and where a large number of people in the African Union do come and spend some time at NEDLAC learning how, as South Africa, we negotiate a number of issues. Currently, we are busy with a big project on the Job Summit, which is trying to negotiate a deal on a package of measures that the President can announce during the Job Summit that would have agreed to as social partners, labor, government, community, and employer as part of dealing with the scourge of unemployment. So in the labor market, NEDLAC is one such, but also in the different factories. That is why we have bargaining councils, and bargaining councils serve as another governance and instrument of promoting democracy in the labor market, where employers and employees can come and negotiate. Sometimes they knock each other's jaw and nose out of joint, etc., but that's fine, part of collective bargaining, until they reach an agreement on the kind of salaries that they need to pay and the kind of input that workers have to contribute and to restore democracy in the workplace. You also have on the shop floor and shop steward councils and so on. And these are part and parcel of entities that have been established in terms of our labor legislation to deepen democracy on the floor. On access to information, again, it does impact on dogs, but the report encourages all of us to have forums where we can provide information to the public on the things we do in the department, and we do also have a lot of public sessions. Almost every second or third week, the department has service delivery or imbizos where either the minister, the director general, or in some cases we also have the deputy minister on same day leading different sessions in different parts of the country with officials of the department and in some instances jointly with other departments where we take service delivery to the people and continue to provide information on the services we render. Again, public participation is also another area, and apart from the things that we do that I've already mentioned in NEDLAC, again, the CCMA is also another avenue that deals with especially those vulnerable workers without the union support, or in some cases where there's union support but it's not sufficient to deal with disputes. But even in some instances, you'd have employers and unions pleading on the CCMA to assist them in negotiating deals. You may have seen what happened in Eskom, a number of other forums where the collective bargaining system could not resolve problems where we will also intervene. On the nation building and reconciliation, again, the employment equity is one of the...
Let me just disturb you a little bit.
Okay.
All of you staff members, I think if you've got problems of your stomach economics, get to that desk at the back and make sure that you are allowed. Proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. Now, again, on the nation building reconciliation, we do conduct a number of things so that we can check as to whether we are still on track. And there are a number of reports, and we just mentioned a few here, Honorable Chairperson. But what we do have, the Employment Equity Report, is a regular publication that indicates how the department is tracking change in the labor market. We do have strikes report. We do have a regular customer satisfaction report on our legislation. We also engage other international agencies such as the ILO, the IMF, to come and check the extent and the relevance of our legislation during different times. We meet with those agencies, and you may be aware, or you may by now have access to a report of all these international bodies, because whenever they visit the country, apart from National Treasury, they also stop at the Department of Labor to look at the contributions that we are making, or to assess certain misconceptions or public opinion around rigidity of our labor market. Now, there is also an issue raised around the distrust in the institutions, and again, this cuts across a number of institutions that we have. Whilst we cite the NEDLAC as one of them, where we bring together labor business, at some stage we must be the ones to acknowledge this. First, that some people were questioning the value of NEDLAC, but I think after the national minimum wage, the discussions that we are involved in, that the credibility of the institution has been restored. The CCMA, you may know that where they intervened, where people were not satisfied with the ruling of the by the commissioner or so on, they would say all sorts of things, but there are appeal mechanisms, etc., even to the labor court, where if people are dissatisfied with the ruling, they can still escalate the matter. Now, I'm raising this because these are some of the mechanisms that were built in, however imperfect they may be, to try and make sure that we restore the trust in our institution. On implementation of legislation, again, the report did talk about a number of amendments that should be looked at, and one of them is that I think they make the panel make a number of recommendations around a series of things related to how government implement legislation and so on. Now, I did indicate that things like poverty inequality cuts across a number of departments, and when we appear here, I think the mere fact that yourselves as honorable members are able to organize joint sitting, it is an acknowledgement that as a single department, some of the things are not easy to implement unless we cooperate. Hence, we have things like clusters. Even the ministers, before they go to the final cabinet, they have to work also as clusters, so that when they present issues at cabinet level, things go having process, and I'm sure in Parliament you also have the same system. Now, when it comes to issues relating to Section 9 entities, the AG, the session that we had earlier, we worked with the Human Rights, the Public Service Commission, etc. We are doing our level best to cooperate with all the Section 9 entities, because we understand the reason why they've been implemented or they've been established and their role to monitor and to ensure that from the different perspectives we implement and we adhere to legislation. And if I can just be specific on a number of issues under labor that was touched on in the earlier report, where there was a suggestion that we exempt certain sections of workers from being paid a minimum wage. Now, honorable members, you participated in the sitting and the hearing of the national minimum wage, and all of us agree that the national minimum wage is there to provide a minimum floor that you cannot go below. However, the national minimum wage has built-in mechanisms for exemption, so that you provide what the recommendations are saying. So what it basically says is that if there are people who believe that given certain reasons they cannot afford to pay what is provided for, then they have got an avenue to use that. Even the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, it provides the minimum floor of basic rights that must be applicable. However, those continue to be provided. And we have a lot of examples, EPWP and others, even though we set rates. Currently, they still have the right to apply to the minister to publish a variation in the ministerial determination to give them those specific exemptions given their conditions and so on. So we believe that the legislation that we have already provides for such rights. We know that there were suggestions that we should not, we also do away with a provision around the extension of the bargaining council agreements to non-parties. But even bargaining councils do have provisions for exemption if people apply accordingly. Now, there's also a recommendation around the variation in terms of wages, especially for those that have been unemployed for a long time, people in rural areas, and so on. Now, again, we would want to point out to honorable members that the minister currently publishes in the main, the sectoral determinations were meant to address those specific categories of workers who may be falling outside of the bargaining council, so that you provide a minimum floor. And in the case, the parties that are covered under the sectoral determination cannot afford, they still also have avenues to apply for exemption in those areas. People in learnership, in apprenticeships, and so on are also paid a different wage compared to what is set in the determination. However, what honourable members must also try and do is to look at the overall intention to strike the balance and to reverse the inequality. Because if you perpetuate and you continue on the trajectory of exemption, eradicating poverty, inequality, and all that is not going to happen, because what you will end up with is the wage gap that will never be closed, because the others that are earning low will continue to earn lower, and those that are earning higher will continue to earn higher. And those are some of the challenges that we are trying to balance. but we also look at the international conventions that say these are some of the things that you do when we are faced with those situations, because if we don't move in line with the international conventions, again, we will be running into some of those problems. And lastly, I think there was an issue around removing the extensions of non-practice laws to be applicable to small and medium enterprises that we also looked at. And what we wanted to point out is that in quite a number of sectors where people are organized, such as the motor bargaining industries, the hairdressing sections, and so on, you will find that the majority members of those bargaining councils are actually members coming from the SMMEs, and they are setting those wages, and this thing is also being extended in a number of areas that we have seen in the co-ops, in people who are selling things as street vendors, etc. They come together and fix a price on what needs to be paid because they also want to regulate their take home, etc. And we believe that in our exchange and interaction with the small business development, we are doing our level best to deal with all the things that they are saying are impacting on SMMEs. In fact, as part of the job summit, one of the working groups is dealing with all the other issues that are likely to impact on the growth of SMMEs, because it's a combination of bylaws that may not be labor relations, it's trading laws that may be under business, some may be linked to liquor licenses and so on. Some may be health-related issues in terms of the goods and services they render and so on that the SMMEs may find themselves dealing with. So in that working group at NEDLINK, we're trying to look at a whole range of issues that are cross-cutting across all departments that impact on SMMEs. And we would want to point out that it's not only something that is limited to the Department of Labor. And that's why we're working also with the bargaining council in those areas. And we are also looking at other areas that are not organized in the SMMEs. And to give an example of the challenges that we still face, when it comes to UIF contribution, compensation fund contribution, retirement fund contribution, most of the SME sector do not have means to participate in those areas, and workers who work in those sectors end up being worse off at the end of their working life, and things like the National Comprehensive Social Security, etc., are aimed at making sure that within the small and medium-sized enterprises, you also have social security intervention lever that you can trigger and use in case things go wrong within the sector, instead of a blanket exemption in all of them, because they also need some of those instruments. I'll post and give over to the acting DG. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mrakaba, for the extensive briefing. Chairperson, this is a submission of the department on the report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. And maybe there will be a need for a very simple tabular form. Here is the issue raised by the panel.
The
kind of intervention that you may require, whether it is regulations or legislative amendments, or it is just another intervention of training, like as you raise education, whatever, for people to know some of the things that they may not be knowing. If, you know, it's maybe there's a need of that, there's a simple table the issues raised, proposed intervention, and then maybe in consultation with our content advisor, so that we just simply have this in our mind. But of course, it's, it looks like it's going to be very tricky when it comes to proposed exemptions and whatever for the utilization of the minimum wage. It's a total negation of the intent. And maybe because the panel, I think, finalized and made the recommendations before we finalized the national minimum wage bill, because we have provided all the other provisions to mitigate some of the areas that they are complaining about. And what they are recommending actually is behind time to what we have provided in relation to the use of the national minimum wage. Honorable member, you had both our quarters advisor and then as well as the department.
Thank you, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to leave for half an hour. I appreciate that. So I missed some of it, so I apologize. And thank you for this feedback from the department. I'm not going to get, I disagree with a lot of the content, and I'm not going to get into that. We'll have that dispute in due course, but I don't think that's now the time and appropriate opportunity to have a dispute. But just a few comments, and maybe you can comment on it. With regard to slide 8, where they've got the progressive realization of socio-economic rights, and the minister keeps reporting that we haven't reached our employment equity targets in the country and their problems. I'm just not sure how that can be done, and maybe you can give us some feedback on that, when the economy is shrinking and everyone's retrenching and not growing. You can't retrench to make way for employment equity. You can't dismiss for that. The law doesn't allow it, unless you, someone's proposing some sort of changes to the law. So I don't know how you can do it if, in fact, everyone's shrinking. In fact, most businesses are. So just a comment on that one. And then this issue about refugees, migrants, and stateless people, and I understand the problem, and yes, it does lead to a lot of xenophobia, and it's a real problem, and I'm not sure how one actually handles it. You've got to be very careful how you handle something like this. But what's fallen into the basket with it is foreigners who come with skills to create other employment here are also now having difficulty getting work permits. It's become a real problem because it gets thrown almost into the same basket. And then another issue over here is that we have just signed the AU agreement. Our president, and I think quite rightly so, has agreed to sign it, which means that there'll be free movement of people, especially through Southern Africa. If that's the case, and what I read in the document, and maybe you read slightly differently, is that people will be able to find employment where they want to in Africa, especially with all the signatories. And so we won't have that problem of people being refugees, migrants, and stateless people, because they'll come and move here to find employment. And you can imagine then the so-called outcry. That may be one of the unintended consequences which I'm now pointing out to you. In terms of the national minimum wage and the exemptions, we saw one set of regulations on the exemptions. Apparently the minister's redoing it or rethinking it. But the first set of regulations said that the people can apply for, I think it was a 20%, a maximum of, I think it was a maximum of 2 rands for every 20 rands as an exemption. Have you seen the latest regulations, or are there new regulations that are coming out? And we had agreed in this committee that we would tackle those regulations as well. I think, Mr. Chair, under your chairmanship, that we would look at it and have our input as well, but somehow it doesn't come back to us. But I know the first lot came out, it got tackled by someone, and then the second lot is coming out. Somehow we've been missed. We've been sidelined as a portfolio committee. It hasn't come to us. And we'd like to see the regulations. Even if we can't have any input in it, I'd like to see it at least. But my understanding was that the minister had agreed to let us have some input in those regulations. Just in terms of where we stand at the moment, and somehow we're doing lots of nice things, and we'll even have some decent changes to our law, and I think a lot of the changes are decent. Our real problem, we're missing the real problem, the two real problems. Let me put them out there. The first one is we just don't have the wherewithal to implement anything. We just don't have the oversight, the inspectorate, nothing. I mean, it's real drop in the ocean stuff. And the second thing is, I don't know if it's mine. The second thing is we also going to have a real problem in that we have the world's greatest unemployment, and somehow no one's interested in that. The real minimum wage in South Africa will remain for the next 10 years 0%. In other words, people will get 0 per hour. That'll be the real minimum wage in South Africa. And maybe you want to comment on that. Thanks.
Any other comment? Honorable Tukavi? It may also assist if you are asking a question directly to the content advisor of the department. You can make it more specific so that then they prepare to respond properly.
Thank you, Chairperson. From my side, Chairperson, I've looked at the report that has been presented and welcome it. I also welcome the efforts already made by the department to deal with issues, especially when we look at the social security or issues. We see that Dolly's already, and the entities, they are already assisting in a lot of areas, zooming in terms of social assistance. And they also going beyond their scope and their mandate in venturing into other areas that are supposed to be dealt with by other departments, like, for instance, the access to quality of education, which we know is not their competency, but also we see there is already movement, because my concern when I read the high panel report, I could imagine that, or envisage my question being that in terms of this different kind of challenges that were mentioned, when the department would propose something to be done, do they have a time frame attached to the different areas where they see that they can influence or do anything? So if there are no, there are areas, they acknowledge there are areas already in existence where there's already movement and some sort of implementation, and
I would also urge the department to initiate the collaboration with different sister departments to strengthen the recommendations by the or implementation of some of the areas of concern. And Chairperson, when listening to what the Honourable Begin said, there were recommendations, or we've seen recommendations now in terms of areas of concern of the national minimum wage level and the implementation in, with regards to the different sectors. But we know that that's an area that we've explored, and I can safely say that we've agreed to disagree on some of the areas of concern, and we don't have the same outlook in terms of the different political parties. But I think we've agreed as a committee when moving forward that there is sufficient remedy in terms of the national minimum wage, provisions in terms of the exemption. But we shouldn't preempt in terms of the regulations. Just to refresh the mind of the Honourable Begum, that the regulations it is part of our committee program, and I think it's next week that we're going to deal with it. So I think there is the opportunity for us to zoom into the different aspects with regards to the regulations. So we don't want to be preemptive when we speak about the regulations, even though we've seen the draft regulations. We might be surprised when we see the regulations being presented to the committee that is differing from the draft that's been in the public domain. So I'll force the chairperson with that recommendation, that observation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm sure it's Honorable Pascal Bates is, as you've just indicated, we did receive a document from NEDLAC on the regulation. And I think the secretary should be able to send them to members.
If you can now.
And so that you can have a look at them when you come to that relevant meeting. And then you'll be ready. And, but I'm not making any assessment of those regulations. All what I know that I've
been asked to see
the document. And then it just needs to be passed into the relevant. But of course that we just have to make sure that all the provisions that we have made inside the act or the bill, because I'm not sure whether it has been signed by now, but that they have been expanded to the regulations where there is uncertainty and not clarity of the actual way of dealing with those particular matters. Quarters advisor, is there anything to respond to? You have heard what the honorable members have said? None. Can we get the department then?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. In fact, all the questions were related to the content advisor. But we'll take this. No, I'm just joking. Well, just to thank you, Chairperson, and the Honorable Franskakwe for clearing the issue on the regulation. I think that's the process at this stage. I'm going to allow Mr. Seafield to talk to walk us through the minimum wage processes and employment equity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to honourable members. Chair, I think in terms of with respect to the Employment Equity Act and the inability or intransigence of the industry to transform. which is very clear in terms of the annual employment equity reports that we have, where we see a very clear picture of the intransigence in the labour market transform. You will recall that we are putting forward a number of proposals to amend the Employment Equity Act to see to what extent we can catalyze these changes within the labour market. These relate not only to the enforcement regime, but also in terms of the fundamentals of the legislation that we want to put forward to the. And my understanding is that the committee will engage with the Employment Equity Act and its amendments in the very near future, hopefully before the finalization of this administration. And we hope that we could have those, but it's dependent on the program of Parliament in relationship to where we stand. What I've indicated is that in these amendments as proposals in relationship to the, as I said, the enforcement regime, the penalty regime, but also in terms of how we deal with the fundamentals of the legislation. So where the minister would be able, as an example, and I'm preempting some of the issues that we put on the table right now, setting industry targets rather than demographic targets in order to deal with these proposals. So it is a fundamental change in the manner in which we're dealing with employment equity going forward. We hope that the proposals that we put in the Employment Equity Act will serve as a catalyst for labour market transformation that we hope to see. We think there needs to be a catalyst for change. And the labour market is not coming to the table. Industry is not coming to the table. They're not transforming. It is not a function, let me be very clear, of the size of the labour market. And whether the labour market is expanding or not, it's an indication of the willingness to transform. And that is the problem with where we stand. So yes, we can argue, for example, that there's no space to retrench people in order to make place for. But the problem of the labour market is not only that; it's something totally different. And perhaps we need to have a debate around what it is and what are the reasons why the labour market is not transforming. The second issue is in relationship to the visa issue that Honourable Bachem is raising is but one of these areas that we need to talk about. But it's a broader area of how we initiate changes in order to make it simpler for the economy to run, for industry to operate in the manner that it's supposed to do. So the visa one is one that we picked up in the, for example, in our discussions around the job summit. But there are other issues. There are other regulatory concerns that we picked up, and we're having a discussion around those. And we hope that we will make some proposals. On the president will make some clear commitments in regard. The visa regulations is one. Policy coherence is another. Is another area of concern that we're addressing, and we hope that the president will make a change. We're already far way along in relationship to addressing the visa issue that makes the distinction between a number of realities that we face. The third issue is around the third issue that we wanted to address was the issue around national minimum wage. I think the chair has already raised issues, but I just wanted to point out that the mechanism that you put in place in terms of the legislation is two, it's actually threefold. The one is that the National Minimum Wage Commission, my apologies, my mind works, my tongue works faster than my mind, I think, and sometimes you I should catch up, or the other way around, is that you are putting in place a National Minimum Wage Commission to deal with the effect and the impact of the National Minimum Wage in its implementation. And therefore, the commission would be able to advise appropriately in terms of whether the impact is either negative, positive, what the reality is around the national minimum wage in its implementation. So that's the one mechanism that you put in place in terms of the national minimum wage. So it would deal with the issues around the risk that may arise out of a national minimum wage that may either be too high in relationship to the effects on employment and the effects on the ability of the employer to carry out his or her business. The second area that you put in place in terms of the national minimum wage is the issue of exemption, where you have the ability to apply for exemption in the event that the wage will impact negatively and you can't afford the national minimum wage. Together with that, there is in the basic conditions of employment, there's a number of areas of flexibility that you have. So addressing the issue of the rigidity around the national minimum wage as a floor. So you have the individual contracts, you have collective bargaining, you have ministerial determinations, and a host of mechanisms that the law talks to in relationship to the flexibility. There's the intent of the legislation, that you have the ability to regulate and vary conditions of employment. So there's a host of mechanisms within the legislation that allows for the necessary flexibility in order to address the concerns that arises out of one's inability to pay the national minimum wage. But we need to be able to say that the national minimum wage is a floor at which nobody should be remunerated below. Let me just point out to a fair bit of statistics that this committee was favored when we discussed the national minimum wage. 46% of South Africans earn below the proposed national minimum wage. 46% of South Africans who are in employment earn below the national minimum wage. And therefore, the national minimum wage is not only the quantum that we talk about, but it is an economic tool to try and facilitate growth in the economy, whether it is in terms of the and the word now slips my mind, and I had it on my tongue just a few minutes ago. I have it. Consumptive. Part of our economy. 60% of our economy is based on the consumptive patterns of the country. And therefore, if you put more money in the hands of the people, you will address 60% of the consumptive basis of our economy in terms of. So it's an important economic tool that deals with the imbalances that we have in the country. It provides a basis for addressing the issue of inequality. So it does not address inequality in its totality, but it provides a basis from which we could address the inequality in employment as we go along. Chair, I think we've addressed the majority of the issues that we have. The high level panel makes three or four proposals in terms of what they think we should do with the legislation. It's around the application of a national minimum wage to those that are earning far below than the national minimum wage, and that mechanism is already proposed for in the law. It provides for it recommends that we deal with the extension of collective agreement. Now the basis, and I want to deal with that area, Chair, because it is an issue that has been raised as well. The basis of the legislation, the fundamentals of our legislation, premises on voluntarism, if you will. So, unless you don't comply, the inspectors will do an inspection, and an enforcement mechanism kicks in. But other than that, it's based on voluntarism, and therefore our legislation does not have a penalty like imprisonment, etc. Unless it's child labour, it's not criminalised if you will. And therefore the extension of collective agreements to non-parties is a basis of extending collective agreements, a basis of extending our approach to the labour market in a very constructive manner. You will recall that this was a matter of a constitutional court judgment, and whether the extension of collective agreements to non-parties was regarded as unconstitutional. I think it's a matter that was brought before the courts by
Nyasa.
No, is it Nyasa? No, it's not Nyasa. But this matter was addressed in terms of its constitutionality. And the Constitutional Court found that it is constitutional to be able to extend and provide the basis for exemptions in the bargaining councils in terms. I'll get to the name of the complainant in a bit. Chair, I think I would stop there.
Okay. Honorable Bahrain, Honorable Bahrain talked about a minimum wage of zero rand. And I'm not sure whether you have heard it. So we need to understand what Honorable Bahrain is saying, whether you have got a response to it. But I would be interested to know the definition of an employee from Honorable Bahrain. And then, because it looks like we may be having two definitions of an employee. Can you respond to that, the national minimum wage being zero rand?
I think the assumption is that the minimum wage of a zero rand would be on the basis of the levels of unemployment that is in the country, where people don't have employment, and therefore they, by extension, would earn zero rand, if you will. The understanding that we have is to understand whether the impact of the national minimum wage would be to have the effect that it has, its effect on employment and the rate of unemployment in the country. And that is the debate that one should have. And in order to address this, I think I've addressed the issue in relationship to the mechanisms in the law that we have that would mitigate against the unintended consequences of the national minimum wage. The instruments that you have built in the law in terms of the exemption mechanism, the National Minimum Wage Commission, etc., to mitigate against the impact of the national minimum wage to the extent that it has the impact that Honorable Bahrain is alluding to when he talks about a national minimum wage of zero rand, if at all. If it is zero rand, then it is not a national minimum wage. It is not a wage, if you will. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it was important for us to understand the definition of an employee that we are talking about in the national minimum wage. And then, because if we miss that definition, then we may be applying the national minimum wage to wrong people. And the fact that you have got people that are unemployed, I'm sure it's not disputed. I don't think there's anybody that is unemployment rate. But I think what needs to come through to the mind of us as honorable members is it right to have 30 million people in the country working but earning nothing? Is it right to have 16 million people working and earning a decent wage? That makes a difference to their lives. These are some of the things that we just need to interrogate wherever we are and make sense out of them. You know, it's having what is called is working poor. Yes, people are working, but then they can't do anything. But they are kept busy from morning until 2-4 o'clock, then they walk, they come back home, they've got nothing, they can't do anything, and then is it a situation that you want to see? And it's a lot more problematic. Honorable Bahrain.
Thank you. Yes, I do disagree with you. Obviously it is problematic, and there's no silver bullet, there's no solution that can be summed up in 1 minute. But where I disagree with you is that an applicant for a job is actually an employee in terms of our law. And you must accept that. And there's the definition of an employee. There are approximately 9.6 million South Africans who are on the job market and can't find jobs. They could be deemed to be applicants in a stretch of the definition. I want to go one step further. We've got a job summit coming. The national minimum wage, the Treasury tells us, might only lose 750,000 jobs, which is not a major train smash. Because if you multiply that by five, it means that that number of people will be starving if they do retrench them. But I'm thinking of a different number. I'll tell you what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of the small businesses in this country who won't, they might not retrench, but they won't go out and create more employment. And that's the real problem. The business community, and we keep hearing this from everyone across the board, the business community seems to be on an investment strike because they are worried about investing in their own businesses. I know because we all deal with small businesses when we go out to our constituencies. And they don't want to invest in their small businesses. Most of them will go and invest rather in Mauritius because there's bigger growth there. And so what I'm trying to say is this job summit can't be business as usual. And I presume that there'll be a lot of innovative things coming out of it. I've seen nothing in terms of the work done by NEDLAC or whoever's working for the job summit. I've seen nothing about it. I don't know if they're going to share it with this committee or not. But I presume they will let us have something maybe even after the job summit. What I think we're all in the same boat. It doesn't matter what political party you come from. It doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. We're all in the same boat. When people can't find a job, it's going to affect all of us. There's not one person in this room, and I'd be so bold as to say the whole of South Africa, that's not affected by unemployment. Everyone is affected by unemployment. We all have family and friends that are unemployed. And extended references in terms of unemployment. That means that for that person that can't find that job, that four other people can't have their wherewithal, because the statistics tell us as well, from the statistician general, that for everyone that's got a job, they look after four people or five people. And so I've got a real problem with us saying, let's glibly say, well, you can't have, the working poor, and I understand that fully. I'd hate to work for 20 rand an hour. I'd hate it, and I'd be the first one to stand up and say that's not fair. And there I agree with Saftu, that 20 rand an hour is horrifically small, but then you've got to look at the other side of the coin. And so we in this committee are trying to balance somehow a way in which forward, because we do have a responsibility in this committee to at least say, let's not have more jobs lost, but we don't want people in jobs to starve either. And I respect what you're saying, Mr. Chair, is that you don't want the working poor, we also don't want those that have got nothing, no job to go to. And that's the balance that you as the Chair need to guide us through and to make sure that we hold hands, regardless of whose political party it is, that we can try and create jobs. Because our president has said, right from day one, from his inception, at the State of the Nation address, has said the biggest priority this country has is job creation. It's not a minimum wage, it's not land redistribution, it's nothing like that. The biggest problem that we've got in this country is job creation, because everyone should be in a job. Everyone that wants to work should be in a job and earning something. They should be. I'm feeling helpless in that. I don't know if we're doing anything for that. Thank you.
Well, it is fine. It's each and every issue that has to be dealt with. It depends from which corner you are you approaching the matter. If you approach it from the north, somebody approaches from south, probably then you'll have different solutions to the same thing. And I think that there is something so-called free market system. There is something that is called free market system. and the experts of free markets will tell you that the market will adjust. Doesn't matter what you do to the market will adjust. Unlike socialism or communism, where you know it's everything it depends on the state intervention. But when it comes to free market, anything that you try and do, you create an imbalance in the free market system. The market will always move to adjust, always move towards balancing it out. And now, I don't know whether it would be correct for us to say that when you bring in the minimum wage, all the entrepreneurs then will walk away from South Africa to go and invest somewhere else. I don't know, because surely that wherever they may be walking to go and invest in Mauritius, it will be saturated as well. Mauritius will be saturated. And the other side of the coin is if we have 30 million people working in the country, and then you give them nothing, you give them 10 rand a day, all of them, 10 rand, there's nothing they can do. They can't even share with anybody. Those that are not working, then they actually disappear below the radar. But then another thinking is, if people are working and then they are getting a decent wage, somebody is capable of asking an unemployed somebody at home to fix the fence at home and share to run with that particular person. It's another con. But if they are getting nothing, then they can't expand and that sharing, because what comes in just disappears in their hands before they even reach home, and create a poor society, and then and a poor workers. So, but like all what I'm saying is, it depends from which corner you are entering the particular debate, and then the outcomes of your debate may be a little bit different. But all what we want, all of us, of course, is we need to reduce the amount of unemployed persons. That must be reduced. We must deal with it on a daily basis. But then we must also ensure that the people that are working, they are getting decent wages to make the difference in their lives. Otherwise, then we are not achieving anything. And the definition of Honorable Bahrain of a person that applies for a job, that person is an employee, I wouldn't question it that much. But what I think the definition of an employee in the National Minimum Wage Bill that we are speaking about, I don't think it covers that person. A person that is on the street, who's looking for work, just because he submitted an application somewhere else, and then all of a sudden then he's an employee. I don't think that definition covers that. I stand to be corrected by the expert, because when we spoke about an employee, is that one of the things is that person must be having an expectation to be paid by somebody. After doing some work, there is an expectation to be paid. But then a person who applied, I don't think there is an expectation to be paid. If he remains an applicant, the expectation to be paid is not there. So which means his compliance with that definition, then it may be a little bit. But I tend to be corrected. Honorable members, I think this takes us to the end of today's meeting. Because the last item we may not be able to do, we need to be seen here. badly. And I need to thank the department and the content advisor for having taken us through. But like as I'm saying is that work together with the content advisor, just get a typical form of those particular areas and the interventions, not in detail, but just indicate those interventions that we can have that flyer in front of us as members, so that whatever we deal with, then we must always reminding our conscience that there are these matters that need to be dealt with, and that's expected of us to handle. Thank you very much, and the meeting stands again.
Thank you, Acting ZG and your team. Thank you very much. Yeah. I thought it was your answer. But didn't they ask if they came to the Constitutional Court?
Yeah, well, I have some questions.
Who paid the cost?
Okay.